was saying to us at Deanery Synod on Tuesday night, and it was actually the best synod I've ever been to. And he's coming to the PCC on Monday week to give a very similar sort of presentation. It's an open meeting. You're all very much encouraged to come and be part of that. And what Jens Minkel's role is to say, if the old church is going, what will the new church look like? What will it be like in the future? And so it's totally fascinating, and he will be, as I say, giving this presentation on Monday week at the PCC, and then he's going to do a five-week course in September here in Westcott, and I encourage you to be part of that. Monday week, you don't need to tell me. You'll get more details about September. You do need to tell me if you're coming to that. But one thing that he said was, what the future of the church is going to be like, is there a control thing here? Thank you. If the old is going, maybe it isn't, maybe there'll be revival. We never know. Perhaps there will be. But if it isn't, if it is going, what will it be like? And very much saying it's going to be, if I've got him right, based much more about small meetings, small gatherings, people talking to each other and just sharing the faith together. And just coming around a bit of scripture maybe and just asking simple questions of it, like these, questions for any Bible passage. Which are, as you can see there on the screen, what does this story say to me? If this story happened today, what would it look like? How could the story make a difference to my life? And then later, did the story make a difference? And those three simple questions, so you don't need to go to theological college for 3 or 4 years, all of you can ask those questions. And I'm sure in your daily Bible study, because I know you're all reading your Bibles every day, that's the sort of thing you would do, is it not? You would ask those questions of yourself. And similarly, then you might be able to envisage a situation with a couple of friends or neighbours. You might be able to ask them the same questions, open up the passage and talk with them and just ask those questions of them. What does that story mean to you? What does this any Bible passage mean to you? And so I'm going to look at a particular Bible passage in a moment, and Jez has offered to read this, so Jez will come out, and it's in two parts really, and I just didn't really know what passage to choose last night, but it felt suitable that as we're coming together on the Sabbath, to have readings about the Sabbath. And these are the reasons. I do suggest you follow them because you've got to do the work. And the work that you're going to have to do is answer those questions. So it's on page 1004 of your Pew Bibles. 1004. Jez, thank you. Oh, you put them both together. You can read them all. Thanks. Yeah.
So the first reading is Mark chapter 2, 23 to 28. That's Mark chapter 2, 23 to 28. One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and as his disciples walked along, they began to pick some heads of grain. The Pharisees said to him, "Look, why are they doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?" He answered, "Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need? In the days of Abiathar the high priest, he entered the house of God and ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for priests to eat. And he also gave some to his companions. Then he said to them, 'The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath.'" And the second reading is Luke chapter 3, verses 1.
I should carry on straight into chapter 3 of Mark. No, that's wrong. Sorry, it's still the Sabbath one. Did I say Luke? Can you carry on reading through Mark? Yeah, I knew it'd all go wrong with a rookie preacher coming in to cover. You just like to read that bit, isn't it? Also about the Sabbath. Thank you. I'm sure Jez can cope.
Another time he went into the synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Some of them were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath. Jesus said to the man with the shriveled hand, "Stand up in front of everyone." Then Jesus asked them, "Which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life, or to kill?" But they remained silent. He looked around at them in anger And deeply distressed at their stubborn hearts, he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and his hand was completely restored. Then the Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians how they might kill Jesus. Here ends the reading.
Thank you, Jez. Thank you. So we got those two stories then from the Sabbath day. And as ever, if there are a few children here, if there are, that sheet is over there. You can make a colouring out of that as well and maybe turn it into as much colour as that previous one of Jesus walking in the fields there. The Sabbath day, and before we think about what does this story mean to you, Naomi and is it Alana coming out? They're going to scare you there for a moment. Naomi's going to come and say, what is a Sabbath, a Sunday like in West Papua? What is it? Because they're over here and here for a few months. But what would it be like? I'd love to hear from Alana what goes on for children as well. Perhaps we can learn from you about what we need to do to bring more children here. So what is it like? What happens on a West Papuan Sabbath Sunday?
Well, Sabbath, Javi just reminded me that Sabbath actually starts on Saturday. If we're thinking rural communities, so people always, because they don't have a supermarket, so people gather enough food for 2 days. Every other day of the week, they only gather enough for one. But on Saturdays, they gather enough for Saturday and Sunday, so they don't have to go out and work on Sunday. And then early in the morning on Sunday, we would hear noise of
children across our house, and the Sunday school there starts at 7 o'clock in the morning and it ends at 10.
What do you do in Sunday school?
When we come all together, we go into different groups and we listen to different Bible stories. And then at the end, before it's 10, we normally share what we have learned with the other children.
And then the adults, church is supposed to start at 9, but people, maybe one or two older ladies, come at about 9 and sit up the front. There's no chairs, so people all sit on the floor. The ladies sit on one side and the men sit on the other side. And the ladies are normally first and they'll start singing. And then when everybody else hears the singing, then they start to come to church. And church, the sermon normally lasts, the shortest version is about an hour, but it can last up to an hour and a half or 2 hours. And lots of singing, and people, just before the sermon as well, there's always a slot where people can share. So people write on a little note or send a message up to the preacher if they want to sing a song or they want to tell a story, a testimony or something like that. And then sometimes there's food afterwards, and then sometimes people will walk home.
Lovely, lovely. That's a lovely picture. Thank you very much. Thank you, Alana. Thank you, Naomi. So that's what we've got to do then. Sunday school, 7 in the morning till 10. And that will draw them all in. That's got an excellent idea. But what then? What does all this mean to you? That story you've just heard about Jesus walking, I'll just remind you, walking in the cornfields. There's the Pharisees in the background there being very officious and condemning. And there is the story of the healing of the man. What do these stories mean to you? What strikes you most out of them? And so you don't talk to your neighbour, just think for yourself. As I said the other night, I hate it when you have to talk to your neighbour. That's sharing your ignorance, really, aren't you? might as well just give your own ignorance straight out and be done with it. So what does it mean? What strikes you about these stories? What key words or key things happen? And children, there is that colouring over there if you want to do that, Aaron and Irian and Alana. If you want to do it, you're very welcome. There's a puzzle over there. But you can play along as well. What do these stories mean to you? So we can have a Quaker meeting and you can just be silent about this. I told you, you're going to work at this. There's no preparation before. But what does it mean? What does these stories strike you? And if not, I'm going to have to tell you the answers.
Hungry, you feed them. Oh, hello. If people are hungry, you feed them. You don't worry about rules and regulations. If people need to be fed, they need to be fed.
Thank you.
There's something about the difference between religion and faith, and it's very easy to get trapped in religion and rules and forget faith and what it's all about.
mean to you? Key people in the story? Peter?
I was just going to say that resting is really important, and we forget that at our peril.
Thank you. Anyone else? Maybe David?
On both stories, particularly the second one, I think it's actually people are people, and we need to treat people as human beings and not objects of people to be taught things or to be converted.
Great, thank you.
Just wondering what would happen in our hospitals and places like that now if we didn't heal anyone on a Sunday. People would just die.
Indeed, thank you. Yeah, go ahead.
I think for me it's about following Jesus's rules, if they're rules, rather than man's rules.
Yeah, thank you. I've had more time to think about it. I'll throw someone in that I came to last night. Jesus is enjoying the countryside, isn't he? He's out there walking, and he's always doing that. He's up in hills, he's out on the lake, he's having breakfast on the beach. So he's a real enjoy of nature, and that is the God we worship, a love of nature. And there's the authority of Jesus. Look at the passage there. He's Lord even of the Sabbath, and that would have been a key thing for them 2,000 years ago, the rules of the Ten Commandments. But Jesus is Lord over the commandments. There's the anger of Jesus. He's so angry at the indifference and callousness of the religious authorities, isn't he? And there's the compassion of Jesus, just moved by that man's suffering and just wanting him to be healed. Anything else? There's Jesus is the key person of the story, obviously. And then what's going on for these Pharisees? What's their problem? Why are they so stuck back and indifferent? And there's something about power there, isn't there? And they're protecting their position, their authority, and presumably it goes with money as well. They're just, that's how their security is in that position of authority and status as well, I guess. And then there's another person there, the man with the shriveled hand, absolutely dependent, isn't he? Dependent on what's going on and on Jesus healing him. So the God we worship, Jesus, the authorities, religious authorities, is there something of that in our church neurosis at the moment about panicking that we're going to lose what the church has been? And some of that is vital and precious, but some of it may just be about buildings and status of the church and privilege and so on. And maybe that's not a bad thing if that is going to disappear over the next 10, 20, 50 years or so. So what, and then, anything else you want to say about what does the story say to me? And what about this one? If the story happened now, what does the story say to me? If the story happened today, what would it look like? What would happen? Do you want to go, Winnie? Yeah.
No hospitals open. Nobody doing anything on a Sunday, basically. Even good things, normal things.
If the Pharisees had their way, if it was a Pharisaic
exactly.
way.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
And we wouldn't get fed.
Yeah. Thank you. Ian?
If it happened today, it would happen the other way around. The Pharisees who would be not religious would be people who were saying Sunday's just the same as any other day. What are you doing going to church? What are you doing worshipping? So being countercultural now is coming to church, not healing or eating on the Sabbath.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you. And could we come with the same way? Could we come relaxing across the fields as you come from the north side of the village or coming down over the hills and just relaxing and enjoying and then coming into your gathering together? And for what? For what purpose? Well, not a load of religion, is it? Certainly not that. So it's presumably to meet with Jesus and to worship him and to know him and to be moved by him and his compassion and love. And independence, isn't it, as well? Like that man who's with a withered hand, our dependence on Jesus, and expectation, I guess, as well, that we will meet with him and that we will be. So it'd be similar. You could just imagine how that would feel, couldn't you? Just coming into on a Sunday, by Sunday, just feeling in that same sort of position. Anything else anyone wants to say? A lot? Yep, thanks, Malcolm. Yeah.
is I felt the Pharisees today would represent political correctness, and Jesus would be the person defying that through common sense and what's right.
Great, thank you very much. Thank you. And what about the last question? How could the story make a difference to me? How does this story make a difference in terms of even attitude or thinking or behaviour? Or how can it make a difference? Thanks, Peter.
I was just trying to think of what human institutions we lean on or rely on that are actually human, instead of looking to Jesus. And I haven't really developed that yet, but I was trying to think, what are the things that we look at unknowingly and blindly? And we sort of caricature the Pharisees as being these idiots, but actually what we're blind to.
Yeah, thank you very much, thank you. Yeah. And Helen?
So I think much along the same lines, because sometimes there's an authority telling you what is correct, but what is correct in the eyes of man isn't always correct in the eyes of God. So you have to sometimes make a stand and follow your conscience.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you. Okay. So making a difference to my life now, then just this getting away from the religion, the tradition maybe, the history and all that maybe baggage, and just coming to meet with Jesus and be with him and be moved to be like him and to love him as he loves us. And clearly it has to say as well, doesn't it, that the Sabbath is still important. And Jens Mengel did say that the other night. He kind of envisages the church being very different, I think, over the next years to come. And it will be much more relationship, small groups and so on, small gatherings, one or twos and here and there. But nonetheless, the Sunday is vital still. That coming together and encouraging one another, even if everyone else has a different way of viewing the Sabbath, as Ian said, it's all countercultural now, isn't it, to be here today? Why on earth are we here rather than enjoying the countryside or the beach or whatever? Because the Sabbath is yet still important in God's purposes. And then the key question will be later. Did the story make a difference? Did it happen? Did it make a difference to you? Did it encourage you for next Sunday to think, oh yes, I'm in the right place next Sunday? Did it encourage you to come with that sense of expectation and dependence and love of Jesus? But you can work these all out for yourself. And then you can do this with your friend, can't you? You can ask the same questions. You can do that quite happily, quite easily. So maybe in your workplace, you could just get a couple of people together and open up the passage and say, what does this mean to you? And then have a chat from there. And that's sort of maybe the way that the church will be in the future. So there we go. I think this is a way forward, actually, for the church generally on sermons. We'll do them between you. And it makes my life much easier for the vicar. Great. Amen.